What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. And this happens to be the Jim Rome Show, starring me, Jim Rome. And it's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You know what we're trying to get done here, right? You know your telephone number is toll-free. You know it's good in the U.S. You know it's good in Canada. You know you can find me on social media. I'm looking for you to interact. I'm looking for you to elevate the conversation. I'm looking for you to break, to make it better, not bring me down. You know all these things. So you know what you have to do. Go ahead and do it. In the meantime, we start hour number two by having a conversation with the head football coach at Michigan State. He's in his first season with the Spartans. He was named head coach back on February 12th. He served as an assistant at Michigan State under Nick Saban back in the day. Two national titles as an assistant. Michigan State was 7-6 on the year. They open up their season October 24th against Rutgers. Mel Tucker is my guest. Mel, it's nice to have you back. Before we get into the season and the work you have in front of you, how are you doing and how is everybody around you at this time doing, Mel?
Yeah, good to be back on with you, Romy. No, I'm doing great, and we have no complaints. Everybody's healthy. The family's healthy. We've got a great staff. Everyone's working together. You know, we're working with our players, you know, connecting with them. And, you know, our practices have been very productive, and so all's well here in East Lansing.
That's good to hear. Mel Tucker joining us. Hey, Mel, take me back, because when you were hired, you said at that time, and again, this is a really unusual time, but at the time that you were hired, you said, quote, "When I walked in, I felt something different. I felt something special. I felt there was an energy. There was a vibe," end quote. So how would you describe that energy and that vibe that you felt?
Well, yeah, this is where I started my career, Jim, and in 1997 and 98, I was here as a graduate assistant, and I always felt a family atmosphere here. Football is extremely important. The fans are incredible, and the community just really supports the program. And it was kind of like everyone's rowing in the same direction and with common goals. And when I got here, all those feelings came back, and it's the same way. And I think that's really special to be able to come into a situation where you know that you're wanted, you know that everyone's behind you 100%. The support is there. There's a family atmosphere, and the energy was very, very high, and it was a lot of positivity, and we've been able to sustain that up until this day.
We're talking to Michigan State head football coach Mel Tucker. That's so important. And then you're trying to establish a culture and then get guys to buy in. But then you have the pandemic, and it's so unusual. Like, there's never been a time in this world really like this. So you can't really compare it to anything. But, Mel, you were with Jacksonville back in 2011 as an example. During the NFL lockout, was there anything that you were able to take from that experience that you can apply to this experience?
Yeah, I was. I leaned on that experience quite a bit, Romy. You know, as you know, during a lockout, you're not allowed to have any communication with the players at all. You can't text them. I mean, email, nothing. You could get fined for that, and that was a big no-no. And so we didn't know when those players would return. We didn't know when the lockout would end, and so I had to make a lot of different types of various contingency plans. In terms of installation of the defensive scheme and, you know, on Excel sheets, you know, if they come back on this date, we better do this. If they come back on this date, we will be able to, if they come back to right before camp starts, we'll only be able to do these things. If it goes 2 weeks into the camp, we have two preseason games, this is what we'll be able to cover. And so we've done similar things here with the contingency plans. And so when we were given the green light to be able to start to practice again and play this season, you know, we were prepared, and we just went right to the process. We're process driven, and we're working our process. And so that experience that I had in 2011 in Jacksonville was extremely valuable.
We're talking to Mel Tucker, Michigan State head football coach. I'm glad you mentioned that you're process-driven, because as part of that process, you know, you've talked in the past about being a fan of neutral thinking, this notion of focusing on the facts and processing information as it comes and trying to avoid riding that roller coaster of emotions. How valuable has that approach been when you deal with an offseason like this, and how have you gone about maintaining that focus of neutral thinking when there's so many major events hanging around the program and the players and the world at large?
Yes, neutral thinking has certainly been an advantage for me and for our staff, because we all believe in that. There was just so many unknowns during this time of COVID, and the information that we were getting sometimes was changing, hourly or daily, and we really just had to be neutral and say, hey, listen, we're not going to judge this. Is it good or bad, right or wrong? It is what it is. What are the facts? What do we know? And based on what we know now, what do we have to do? What is within our control? And there's a lot of uncertainty, but we had to figure out what is certain, what can we control, and then focus on those things. And so, just the neutral thinking, not judging the situation, we never try to just go to being positive. We just try to avoid being negative. We try to stay non-negative. And if you're thinking negatively, it affects you one way. If you verbalize that negativity, it's even seven times more powerful. And so, we don't try to paint things with rose-colored glasses here, but we take them as they come, and we try to be neutral and be non-negative about it and just figure out a way how to get the job done.
Mel, my guy Trevor Moad would be thrilled to hear that, right?
No doubt. Trevor's the guy. I've been working with Trevor since 2015. I met him when I left the NFL and went back to college ball at Alabama. We've been great friends ever since, and we talk about these things, weekly and daily. He's been a tremendous help to me and to the programs that he's been a part of: Alabama, Georgia, Colorado, and he's an integral part of what I do here.
I love him. He's tremendous. Mel Tucker joining me for a few more moments. Mel, so when you look at it, you get the green light, so then it's go time. I mean, ultimately, it's go time, and you got to get ready for the season. And Rutgers, I'm curious, how much of your work right now is about you and your guys, and how much of it is about Rutgers?
Yeah, all of our work right now is about us, about Michigan State, and teach, motivate, developing our players, shifting our culture, focusing on our process, just driving at home and really connecting with our players that we've had very little time with. When we scrimmaged last Saturday, that was the first time that we had seen our players play football in a live setting, live tackling to the ground.
Wow.
That was our first time since we've been here. And so at some point towards the end of next week, we'll start to turn our attention to Rutgers. But until then, we're really just working on Michigan State and how we need to improve, focus on our process, hammering our culture, and working, being very deliberate about connecting with our players.
So, Mel, one last thought. Leave me with this. When you talk about the culture that you're looking to develop and how you want your team to practice and how you want your team to play, what do you want people to think of when they think of Michigan State football?
Yes, when you think about Michigan State football, you should think about a brand of ball that is reflective of how the game is meant to be played. It's a physical game. It's the ultimate team sport. You want to see an unselfish football team that's playing for each other, that has great energy, that doesn't beat itself. Versed in all the special situations, guys that play fast, play with tremendous technique and fundamentals, and a team that when you look out there, you say, you know what, there's a difference. I see, you know, that's what Michigan State football is supposed to be about. Michigan is a hardworking state, you know, bootstrapping state, you know, roll your sleeves up, hard nose, hard working, get it done, no excuses, no explanations, you know, just a rugged, resilient state. And that's what Michigan State has always been. That's what our fans are all about. That's what they expect. And that's the brand, and that's the product that we plan to deliver on the field.
Heck yeah. That football team is going to mirror that basketball team, too. Tom Izzo would tell you the exact same thing. He is the head football coach at Michigan State, first year with the Spartans, and they open up against Rutgers on October 24th. He won a couple of national titles as an assistant and was an assistant at Michigan State previously under Nick Saban. Mel, great to have you back. Great to get caught up. Thanks so much for the conversation. Good luck against Rutgers, and I know you and I will do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. I really appreciate you coming on, having me on, Romy. It's quite an honor. And have a great weekend, buddy.
You too, Mel. I appreciate you very much. And I appreciate the relationship and you coming back on. Mel Tucker, the head football coach at Michigan State. It's amazing, right, that they live scrimmage for the first time since he got there about a week ago. And then all of a sudden you've got that game against Rutgers coming up right around the corner. All right, 1-800-636-8686. Call right now. Open segment coming up next. Chris McGee. He's going to join me at 40 past, and we will talk some Laker basketball, Lakers Heat. Friday night, Lakers looking to finish off Miami. Also, it's Big Friday. You've got the Yankees and the Rays. Who you got? Four more Major League games yesterday. Man, there was a weird moment in the A's-Astros game that I want to go back to. The Dodgers hammered the Padres, and for the Padres, that's got to be pretty humbling, pretty humiliating. I know it is for their fans. The fans hate the Dodgers. So to not only lose to them, but to get swept out and have those brooms busted over their heads, that's got to be tough. And my point to you Padre fans is this. You ran into a buzzsaw. You ran into a better team. A better team. A deeper team. And no, they didn't get your best shot. And that's got to be the most frustrating at all. That they didn't get your best shot. No, they didn't. But it wasn't your time. It's just not. But it's going to be, and sooner than later. I wouldn't sweat that. As bad as that feels right now, I would not sweat that. LA advances. They sweep the Padres out, and now they move on to the NLCS, where they have to deal with the Atlanta Braves. And that's no gimme either, the Braves. The week that was, Alvin's iconic week that was, is coming up next hour. The ATP is actually in hour number three. One thing I didn't get to yesterday that I want to try and hit before the weekend if possible, I've got a really good episode of the Jim Rome podcast with Hunter Pence. I had not spoken to him in a number of years. He came in and showed up like a boss. Really good energy, amazing anecdotes. And if you're in the Bay Area and you want to hear a great conversation about some of those amazing Giants teams, the clubhouse, the personalities, Hunter Pence, like, is a cult figure, a giant legend. So that's a really good conversation. I want to reset that for you, too. And one more phone number for you as I go to break. If you want to blow a number up over the weekend, you could dial the toll-free number. No one's going to pick it up. You can dial this number, though, and leave me a voicemail. 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. All right, when we come back, I want to get into the Dodgers and the Padres. Also, something I'm going to try and get to because it's Friday and I can. Saw a wild movie trailer. A wild movie trailer about something you clones can identify with. One of your favorite things. A fat man.
Fat.
I'm not going to promise that I'll get to it, but it's on my radar. I might. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So I'll tell you what I'm going to do right now. Instead of going to my next thing, or my next take, or my next rant, I'm just going to sit here and do nothing and wait for a good phone call to come. Yeah, sure I'm not. I'll be here a long-ass time. No, we're not doing that. Now, in the meantime, the phone lines are open if you want to hit it and you want to give it a shot. 1-800-636-8686. I mentioned there were four games in Major League Baseball last night in the postseason, but there may not have been a more bizarre moment than this particular moment from the A's and the Astros. Let me take you back in case you missed this. The A's had a couple of men on in the top of the second. Ramon Laureano was at the plate. Zach Greinke was on the mound. Before he threw a 3-2 pitch, he threw up two fingers, which appeared to be him telling Laureano that he was going to throw a curve. Like, that was the ultimate power move right there. Like, I'm telling you what I'm about to throw you, and you still can't hit it. I'm going to let you know what's coming, and you still will not be able to hit it. You know, kind of like the pitching version of Babe Ruth calling his shot. The reverse of that, or the pitching version of Babe Ruth calling his shot. So he holds up two fingers like, hey man, the hook is coming, and I'm going to tell you what's coming. And then this happened.
Saw this with Greinke during the regular season. He will show what he's going to throw. This is driven in the air to left field. Back goes Tucker. He is at the wall. That ball is gone. Back deep into the pavilion.
All right, so an amazing moment, right? And if you're watching this, Greinke doesn't even turn around. He knows the second the ball leaves the bat. And immediately Twitter knew. And immediately Twitter did what Twitter does. Twitter piled on Greinke and was killing Greinke, you know, for his arrogance, his hubris. How arrogant would you have to be to tell a batter what you're going to throw and then put it on a tee for him? How dumb would you have to be to tell the batter what you were going to throw only to have that batter reverse it about 900 feet? Like, that was one of the best things ever. One of the best things ever. Or it would have been if that's actually what happened, but that's not what happened. In fact, that's not what happened at all. Greinke was not telling the batter that he was going to throw a curve. He wasn't telling the batter anything at all. He was communicating with his catcher and telling him what set of signs to use when they have a runner on second base. So it was not the best thing ever.
That's just what I've been doing this year for the most part, where I just switch the pitch so that it doesn't waste time shaking off and stuff.
Too bad, man. Too bad. Oh, how awesome would that have been? That would have been the best. Unfortunately, that's not what that was. If something seems too good to be true, generally it is. What that was a routine move. That was not some reverse Babe Ruth. Wishing it were is not going to make it so, unfortunately. And it did not end up costing the Astros anyway, who knocked out the A's with an 11-6 win. Man, it would have been awesome, but it wasn't. Speaking of teams handling their business, that's exactly what the Dodgers did with the Padres when they finished off their sweep last night. And that was just another example of big bro, little bro. Big bro giving little bro an atomic wedgie. The Dodgers did have to grind out that game one win. True. Game two did include the great Bellinger home run robbery of 2020 and the even greater Gratterall celebration of 2020. Game three, though, just a beatdown. An old-fashioned beatdown. The Padres actually had a 2-1 lead going into the third, and then the Dodgers broke out the big sticks. Sorta.
Betts leads from second.
And the 1-2. Up the middle. Diving, stabbed by Tatis, throws from his knees, two bounces. It gets past Hosmer. In the score is Betts, and going to second base is Seager, and the Dodgers have tied it at 2.
Wait a minute. So Alvin is moonlighting as a play-by-play man, and so is Ritt? Finally. Was that you?
It's lit!
So, yeah, Mr. President, see you on Wednesday for our birthday. So that was followed up by a Justin Turner RBI single, then an A.J. Pollock RBI single, then a Jock Peterson single that drove in a couple of runs. Oh, and that Turner single broke the Dodger team record for postseason hits, a record that he shared with Steve Garvey. Shout out to number 6. Keep pounding. Tell you what, though, Garv, you still got the pump chicks record that nobody will ever break. Whoa, I did not say that. See, clones, sometimes you do hook me. That was just a flashback. I was just throwing it back to what you clones used to do 20 years ago. TBT. So if you like RBI singles, well, then you'll like this, because the Dodgers then came back with another one in the fourth.
In game five, there's a line drive base hit into center field. Betts rounding third. He comes home to score easily. Sliding into third base is Corey Seager.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rit, if you like sack flies, you'll really like this.
One and two to Betts. Altuvilla delivers. Bringing a fly ball to right field. It's deep. Drifting back is Will Myers, makes the catch. Pollock tags from third, comes in to score, and the Dodgers lead it 8-2.
So at that point, it's 8-2, Dodgers. Padres aren't coming back. Not with the way Julio Urias was pitching. That was a masterclass from Urias. Five innings, one unearned on a balk, punched out six. And the Dodgers still would not let up. In the top of the ninth, they dump some salt into San Diego's wounds.
Smith lines one to right, and that's going to drop in for a base hit. It's going to roll to the wall. Will Smith with five hits.
Rit, when did you get that job? Incredible.
Game on.
And then they just kept going. See, that's the thing about the Dodgers. That offense, it can come from anywhere at all. Anywhere at all, anytime at all. It doesn't have to come from guys in the lineup that already have league MVPs. It can come from anybody who throws on a Dodger jersey all the way to the bottom of the lineup, including the catcher. Maybe it's Mookie Betts. Maybe it's Corey Seager. Maybe it's Justin Turner. Maybe it's Max Muncy. Maybe it's Will Smith. Maybe it's Cody Bellinger. I mean, the list goes on and on. They're that deep. They put up 12 runs in a game last night where they did not hit a home run. And they proved yet again that Big Brother is still Big Brother, and that he's getting over on Little Brother and has been for a while. Going into that series, there was all this talk about, you know what, the Padres, they're going to be right there. Not only will they be right there, not only will they be a tough out, but they might win. They're going to push L.A. four or five games. They may beat L.A. And then the Dodgers go right through them. And for the Padres, I know that's going to sting. Again, even more so because they feel like the Dodgers did not get their best shot. However, I'm here to tell you, the future is bright in America's finest city. Bright as hell. This is the beginning of what could be an amazing run for the Padres. There is so much talent on that roster. So much young talent on that roster. And it's going to be in San Diego for a long time. For a while to come. This team was not built to win right now, yet they were right there. And more importantly, they're built to win for a while. Yes, you ran into a buzzsaw. Yes, you got your heads handed to you. Yes, it was humiliating. And no, I'm not going to argue that you have to go through this in order to come out the other end. Because, by the way, teams do win it all without having to go through this. You don't have to go through this. It's not part of the process. But I will tell you, they're going to come out on the other end. They will. And they'll be better, and they'll be stronger. Believe that. The Dodgers are just better and deeper, and it's their time. It's not your time right now, Padre fan, but I am loading up on your stock. I love these guys, because your time is coming, and it's coming sooner than later. It's going to be fine. It's going to be better than fine. They'll be back. We know this. 1-800-636-8686. Checking for some jungle reaction. I'm not seeing it yet. Come on now, clones. What do you want to hit? You've got the NBA Finals, which could end tonight. You've got plenty of pro football. You've got some college football. You've got some Major League Baseball. You've got the NFL schedule. You've got last night's meltdown. You've got Tom Brady not owning that he lost track of the downs. You've got the Bears, who are 4-1, that don't look anything like a 4-1 team. You've got Alvy's week that was. And I've got a golden ticket to give away. The Smack Off is still going to happen next year. 2021 is going to be better than 2020. 2021 is going to have a Smack Off regardless. Jets had a positive test, reportedly sent everybody home. And I'll tell you who's getting screwed. The team that's getting screwed more than anybody right now, the Bills. Bills Mafia. They're doing the right things. They're following protocol, and what do they have to show for it? Totally in limbo. Totally in limbo. Salvi. Well played.
Am I a good father? Are you?
I don't know. Ask Rogan Loam.
Totally trashed.
D-Rod in the 925 tweets, was that movie trailer
Rogan Loam
about a fat plumber in L.A.
Fat?
That cleans porta-potties and calls a national radio show just to be the bit of all jokes? You mean the butt? No. No, the movie trailer is not about Matt. But it is about somebody fat. It's not Matt.
Fat?
Hi, Jim. What's the difference between Tom Brady and an intoxicated bum? None. They both have trouble counting their quarters. Sarah, yes! You shouldn't have.
Yes.
No, I mean, really, Sarah, you shouldn't have. It's not Gronk. Hey, why is it that Brady can't find Gronk when he needs to find Gronk now? Why are they not finishing drives? Came back to bite them in the ass, didn't it? Let's see here. I'm thinking about the big head, James Kelly. He just alerted me to something. Lamar practiced, which means the lines are back. Okay. So that's Bengals Ravens. That's noteworthy. James Kelly is coming up next hour. When we come back, my man Chris McGee. We're talking Laker basketball. Chris McGee always brings the energy. He will be hyped. That hyped. That's coming up next. Before I get to Chris McGee, I've got a sports update for you. Here is the latest on this Friday. Here is Bob Huesler.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
NBA Finals resuming tonight in the bubble. Let's talk some basketball. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Halfway through it. Clones, step it up. You know, hour number three on Friday is always a busy hour. You're going to have a tough time getting through. You want to hit me right now. I will get to those phone calls a little bit later on. But first up, we are joined by a studio anchor and a host for Spectrum Sportsnet, a panelist for our daily TV show back in the day, co-host of the Detox Podcast, good friend of mine, good friend of the program. He is Chris McGee. My brother, Chris. What's going on? How are you?
Romy, always an honor to be on. I hope you, Janet, and those Studley boys of yours are doing well, brother. What a good time to be in L.A.
Oh, man, it's a great time. Hope you and the fam are doing well, too, Chris. So you're always upbeat already. I can hear it. You're positive. You're always going to bring the energy. How are you feeling today when you wake up the morning of Game 5 knowing that the Lakers have a chance to close out the finals this evening and win title number 17?
Romy, it's a crazy feeling. I haven't had it in a long time. You know how spoiled we are living in this town. But, you know, I took this job at Spectrum Sportsnet, you know, 8 years ago when the Lakers started that new network. And man, we haven't even been to the playoffs, Jim. We've had no wins. Big Game James, Rob, the whole crew. So today just felt good, man. My little one, my nine-year-old daughter came up. She's got full Laker gear on. She's like, Daddy, this is how I'm watching the game tonight. I got Silk Bra, the legend, tweeting me. I mean, it's pretty awesome, Jim. I got to tell you, I'm trying to keep it in perspective. Got a show to host. But you know I'm ready, buddy.
My man, that is HB City Council candidate Silk Bra tweeting
yes.
at you. Chris McGee joining us. All right, so not only do you have a chance to close out, or do they have a chance to close out the finals, but they're going to break out the Mamba jerseys tonight. Chris, now you were the one leading that charge on Twitter earlier in the week for that very move. How fired up are you that they're going to wear those uniforms?
It's funny, Romy, I tweeted that right after the game because I'd heard that they weren't scheduled to wear them. And I even said in the tweet, literally, I have zero pull, but it would be really cool. And sure enough, the right decision was made. Listen, the last time you and I talked was the day after Kobe died. Well, I mean, here we are, you know, 9+ months later. You feel his spirit everywhere. I know you do as well. You were tight with him. You had a relationship. You live in a Newport. You know, he was part of that community. Such a major part of L.A., iconic global figure that he was. And listen, man, like, I'd be lying if I said I haven't thought a lot about him over the last couple weeks. There's always a little sadness for Romy, like me thinking, man, this would be so fun at Staples and just the Kobe chants. You could just imagine it, right? But when I think about Bron winning his fourth tonight, if he can, in Orlando, that's where Kobe won his fourth. You know Kobe's there in spirit. It's a big deal, and they just play different in those jerseys, Jim. It's just true, man.
No, they do, Chris. I don't think there's any doubt. And you obviously have a lot more pull than you think. Chris McGee is joining us. You know, I've asked this of every single NBA analyst that I've spoken to over the course of the year. So let me ask you also right now, how would you explain LeBron James playing at the level that he is at this point in his career?
It's just, it's unreal. And I feel like because I'm hosting every game night and every non-game night show, I often try to find new ways to describe him, Romy, and it's real tough. 17 years in, I just don't know if we've ever seen anything like it. I've never seen a guy be able to kind of have a pulse on what the game needs and what his team needs every single game, and that's why I always say he's the MVP. Like, he really dictates, Romy, how both teams play, especially the Lakers. Like, he just has those nights where he knows you need his offense, and he's going for 12 or 14 in the first quarter. And then you have those nights where he only has 8 at half, but then you look and he's got 11 assists already. And it doesn't matter how you think he plays, Jim. When you look at the box score at the end of the night, it's 39-10, 29-14-11. I'm running out of ways to describe it. But I think what the most important and most impressive thing, Romy, for me is this year he changed something and he led the league in assists for the first time. 6'9", what, 280? He led the assist, led the league in assists for the first time in his 17th year. To me, that's an incredible stat.
It's an amazing stat. Like, as much as I love Karl Malone back in the day, he was not going to lead the league in assists, right? You know,
no.
So when you look, Chris McGee is my guest, expertly breaking this all down. So what do you think, Chris, knowing the man the way you know the man and knowing the reaction of Laker fans when he first got here, it was such a Kobe town, what do you think that a fourth NBA title and a first title with the Lakers would mean to LeBron?
I think he, a lot like Kobe was actually, Jim, and you know this from all those hours you spent with him and interviewing him, man, he was a student of the game. LeBron is cut from that same cloth. And it was interesting. When he came over, when he first came over a couple summers ago, he there wasn't a press conference. He didn't come out right away and embrace it like the fans wanted. So it was a little bit of an interesting start, right? But this year, before the season even started, he even said, like, listen, Laker fans don't care what you did before. And he understands what it takes. And then Kobe passing, the way he kind of took the microphone, took the torch and ran with it and led this team, he knows exactly what it means. And I think for him, Jim, outside of the Cleveland title, he's putting this right up at the top. And for me, his legacy grows even more. I mean, all those people that said he couldn't win in the West and, you know, had to be in the easy East with the cakewalk. Well, he's proven them all wrong again. I mean, he continues to do it.
Chris McGee is joining us. The Lakers have a chance to close it out tonight. You know, Chris, you mentioned that you got that job 8 years ago, and you and I would talk. You would come on The Daily Show, and I know those were challenging times. Like, if you were to go back to 2014, the Lakers were 27-55. Then they lost 61. Then they lost 65. Then they lost 56. What were those years like for you as the guy who had been hosting Lakers coverage at that time?
You know, I think back to those times where I was coming on your TV show, and I was telling you, man, Jimmy, I've been listening to you since the early 90s, and it was just so awesome. I'll never forget you. You know, you knew who I was, and you gave me some advice about, like, hey, just keep hosting those shows, keep grinding. Like, for me, because I always felt like it, and I did a funny video at the start of the playoffs. I did, like, a, you know, 3-minute rant. You know, Laker fans were loving it. But basically, I was saying, like, 17 wins, 19 wins, and I was the first face you would see. You know what I mean?
Right.
After all those losses,
always.
That wasn't very fun. So I think back to those times, and I was watching some old videos recently. I mean, listen, we navigated through it. We would try to pump up Ryan Kelly as the stretch four you needed. Robert Sacre, what a story. Roy Hibbert, can he get back to defensive player of the year? I mean, the stuff I was slinging, I think back and I go, man, I was really trying to keep it positive.
Wow.
The difference, Jim, it's just easier working now. It's easier doing shows. You can just speak from the heart and tell the truth. It's pretty awesome.
It's really something. I'm kind of chuckling because, yeah, man, you worked it. You always spoke from the heart, and I know those storylines that you were selling, you believed, and you did what you did then. It is much easier right now, but it's amazing, Chris, the way it turned around. Like, Magic steps down in April 2019. At that time, the outside perception of the Lakers was this is a really, really dysfunctional organization. 18 months later, they've got a chance to win an NBA championship. How has the organization and this team turned it around so quickly?
It's crazy, but you got to give a lot of credit to the front office. And you go back to what you were talking about when Magic stepped away and Luke went to Sacramento. Those were tough times. But when you land a player like AD and all those years, Jim, that you talked about, the 17 wins, the 19 wins, the building up those assets and draft picks and those young players, you were able to trade them for Anthony Davis. The work then began, I thought, signing an Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, who was an afterthought, Romy, Rondo, getting him back in the mix, even guys like JaVale McGee, role players like Alex Caruso, who really, unless you were around the organization, you just didn't know how awesome this kid was. All those guys, getting Markieff Morris for free after the deadline, all those little things added up to a championship team. I mean, here's the thing, Jim, when I'm watching over the playoffs, they have a luxury that no other team had. Just the versatility to change on any given night, any given series, go small, go big, go with three guards, go with all bigs. I mean, it's insane what they've been able to do, and you have to take your hat off to that organization. To be able to pivot, Romy, like you just said, the day after Magic, you know, it looked like they were, you know, lottery bound again, and literally here we are a year and a half later, and they're in the finals. I don't know if there's another organization in sports that would be able to do that.
Chris McGee joining us, and honestly, if I'm being really transparent, I did not see that happening. I did not see that pivot. I mean, it's amazing. It really is amazing. Chris, before you go, I want to ask you, for some reason, like, Frank Vogel is not getting a lot of credit for the job that he's done this year, and I want to say it again for the record. I think this guy is an unbelievable coach. I said it, an unbelievable coach. I think he's done an amazing job, and I think he's a great coach. How impressed are you with the job that he has done and the way he handled the pressure that comes along with coaching this franchise?
You just nailed it for me, Jim. He handles the pressure. He handles his business. He's not a guy that's looking for all the credit. He has never mentioned a word. I'll never forget sitting in Jeannie's office. I did a sit-down half-an-hour interview with him before the season started, and that's where we did it. We had about 20 minutes to chat, and I'll never forget walking away going, man, I'm really impressed by this guy. A couple guys I knew around the league that played for him, they're like, trust me, this guy can coach. But I love, Jim, that, like, it's almost like Pete Carroll when he came to SC. He's like the third or fourth option, right? And all of a sudden you got Jason Kidd, you got Lionel Hollins, you got all kinds of, you know, head coaching experience, and people thought that that would be pressure as well, and that everyone would start to try to, you know, divide this group. And he kept everyone on the same page. And honestly, Jim, the only goal this team has had was win a championship. And when everyone's on the same page and no one's selfish and looking for their own numbers or looking for the credit or looking for the money, you can do amazing things. And that's what Frank's been able to do. And by the way, coach his butt off. Like, all those adjustments defensively, give the man some credit. He's been incredible.
Chris McGee joining us. Now, when you mentioned, like, those things that could have happened, like, guys, if they're running off and they've got their own agenda and they're thinking about me, I mean, you're talking about a guy, the artist previously known as Dwight Howard. Chris, I got to ask you, like, how pleased are you with what Dwight has brought to the Lakers in his return to L.A., and how shocked are you by the way he's shown up and maintained this the entire time?
If 8 years ago someone came to me and said, hey, man, you're going to be on the Jim Rome show and you're going to be applauding and praising Dwight Howard, I would slap him in the face. I mean,
right?
Jim, it's you know, when I really saw it, Romy, for the first time, I think it was right around it was early in the season, game three or five. You know, we're always in the studio, but once in a while the boss will run us out to Staples and we'll do the pregame show there and shake hands and kiss the babies and feel it. You know, it's pretty fun. James is out there with me. We have a great time. And I'll never forget sitting there watching the game, you know, press row with Big Game James. And I'm looking out there and I look over and I go, James, I go, Big Game, Dwight Howard, they're chanting his name at Staples. He had the quickest turnaround, Romy, I've ever seen. And all he did was hustle, compete, set screens, dunks, just do all those things you always wanted him to do. And he did it selfless. That was it. And he stepped up for his teammates. He backed KCP on Instagram when everyone was all over him. And he was a leader. And they fell in love with him again. It was pretty awesome. I'm so happy for him, Jim. He's really been through it.
I think it's been absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it watching it, and I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and for it to come to an end, but it didn't. And then, Chris, how funny, I've got about 60 seconds. When he turned a heel in the postseason, man, the whole thing is just so hilarious to me. Like, he's doing all the dirty work, but you can't help but just look at this guy and laugh, and for the right reason.
Right, for the you just hit it on the head. For the right reasons. And how about, like, he doesn't play against Houston at all. His attitude is great. And then he comes out and he just baffles Jokic in that first game and just causes a absolute havoc. And you're like, there's the value. That's Dwight. He's bad. And you're right. You're laughing for all the right reasons.
He is a studio anchor and a host for Spectrum Sportsnet, a panelist from our daily TV show back in the day, co-host of the Detox podcast, an absolute pro, and a very good friend of mine personally and of the program. My man, Chris, you have a great night. Great to have you back in the jungle, and thanks for picking us up.
Romy, love you, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
I love you too, man, for sure. Chris McGee is one of my favorite people ever. He is such a good dude and such a pro. Geets, coming back, hour number three. It's going to be a good one. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome.